Well, if you're interested in home renovation and repair, or maybe you're interested because you have to be, not because you want to be, sometimes that's the case. Tell you what, we've got a good show for you right now because John Viner of Building Services and Consultancies with us today, and Chad Spate as well from Chad's Carpentry. John's experiences with residential mechanical systems, insulating and air sealing, expertise in building principles. Chad knows a lot about building and remodeling. He's been doing it since
1992,
that's correct. Chad. Yep. Welcome, by the way. Nice
Thank
to have you.
You
with us.
It's great to be here.
And John, good to have you back. It's been
Thank
a while.
You, Larry.
Nice to have you with us. You guys both busy? John, you busy?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a great winter for us as far as just the remodeling that's happening out there and the advising and consulting that I'm able to provide to maximize those opportunities, right, to prevent those darn ice dams.
Well, I'll tell you, and Chad, you've been busy too.
Oh, yeah, it's a typical winter. Things slow down a little bit, but we keep everyone busy. So.
You know, I was reading just in the within the last day or two a little article in the paper that said that because the housing sales are down, you know, the market's kind of down, that a lot of people are turning actually to remodeling the home they've got, or maybe spending a little money on what they've got because they don't, you know, they don't feel like they're going to get their money out of it now.
Right. Well, you know, historically, whenever there is an economic downturn, people do turn to remodeling their homes. This time, I think it's a little bit different just because of the housing market suffering a little bit of a decline. People are being a little more cautious this time. It's not that they aren't remodeling, but I think they are trying to be prudent because a lot of homeowners look at their home as an important investment.
Yeah.
And certainly, they don't want to put a lot of money in and then see the value of their home drop and not be able to recoup at least some of that.
Of course, if you're in the Larry Mueller household, we throw caution to the winds and just go right ahead and do the remodeling and spend all kinds of money. Oh, my goodness me. Well, we just finished a great remodeling project, and I'm happy it's over, and I'm sure everybody's kind of happy it's over, and we won't be doing that again for a little while. I'll tell you what, Bob in Woodruff has a question for you. So let's go to Bob. Bob, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Nice to talk to you. Just let me run by quickly what I've got. I've got about an eight-year-old home, and I have an ice dam along the gutter about 7 or 8 foot wide where there's a valley. It's not a problem taking care of the ice dam and keeping it under control with hot wire. But I've gone up to the ridge vent. I've run heat tapes along that, 100 foot of heat tape to keep that open. It doesn't seem to ventilate the attic. I put a exhaust fan in. Now I can ventilate the attic, but I feel like I'm throwing this heat out the fan that I paid for. Now, I've done something I've never talked to an insulating expert do. I put a remote thermometer up in my attic. And when there's a snow cover on my attic, the temperature is probably 15 degrees above the outside temps. Number one, I guess, does anybody know what the temperature is supposed to run in the attic?
Yep.
And what I really want to know is some place where I can get a hold of somebody with infrared or something that can pinpoint where I'm losing this heat. Part of my house is a cathedral ceiling, and I believe some of it may be coming from the knee wall, but it's not insulated very well. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. You might want to hang on for just a minute. Maybe John or Chad has a question for you. But, John, let's start with you, and Chad will sort of chime in, too.
Yeah. The eave venting certainly is important to control that ice damming. Ideally, we'd like to be able to control that ice dam without all that heat tape up there. And certainly, many homes are capable of doing that as long as they're functioning adequately. The heat loss, adding that fan in the attic, I'm assuming you put an attic fan in and now you put it on a thermostat so that it runs a little bit more. If we have that air leaks, we lose heat a couple ways through the insulation, through conduction, but also through air leakage, which becomes the priority of stopping the darn holes, sealing them up. If we put that attic fan up there, we can actually increase the heat flow from the house into that attic, which is a concern. So we don't want to do that unless we know we have an airtight lid on that house. attic temperatures should be as close to outside as we can get it. You know, if we have great ventilation low at the eaves and high on the roof, and well air-sealed lid, ceiling of the home, well insulated, it's going to be really close within 10 degrees. I'm going to throw out a figure. I haven't spent a lot of time with thermometers up there in attics. But 15, 20 degrees, that's certainly getting up there and warmer than we'd like it. And you could be aggravating it with that exhaust fan. A place to get a good infrared scan is consultants through the Focus on Energy program, and they're right in your neck of the woods. So there's discounts off the services through Focus on Energy. And if I could, I can just give you that 800 number.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and do that?
That's 800-762-7077.
Wait a minute, 762-7077?
Yep, ask for
800. Okay,
one yep.
And I tell you, we had that done at our home before we did the remodeling. And boy, it was amazing what they can do with these infrared cameras. You can see, wow, you know, little spots where there's a leak here or there. But, Chad, anything to add to what John had to say?
Well, I would agree with John. I think that fan needs to be turned off. If I understand it correctly, you were venting the air out of the attic to the outside. And so I would turn that fan off and see what happens to the temperature. And with some infrared imaging, I think some insulation and air sealing detailing will be the answer to your problem.
Yeah, I think there needs to be some more insulation there somewhere along the line. Good luck to you. Thanks a lot for calling. And that Focus on Energy program is a great program. I think it's somewhere between $200 and $300, I think it costs. But it's money well spent, and they actually come in and they'll do a blower door test and all this and that. But then they will also come in at no additional charge, or part of the original charge is for them to come back and after you've done the work, had the work done, and check again.
And that's right. And that's because the Focus on Energy program continues to support the program, right? So
yeah.
You get that follow-up, no cost, extra cost to you.
Yeah. Greg in Menominee, your turn now. Hi, Greg. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
My question is, I have a house stick-built, split-level attached garage that was built in 76. And I got four little ones, and my wife, but we're looking at building on over the garage for additional bedroom or two. And my question is, how do I know whether that foundation is going to support another level above the garage?
Okay, well, let's go to Chad for that. Chad,
you know, do you have a two-story home otherwise? I mean,
it's
the garage a single story and you have a two-story
attached
home?
Attached split level.
Okay. Well, you know, the chances are that the footing that was put in for that home is more than adequate for a two-story structure. It would be very unusual for a home built since the 50s not to have an adequate foundation for a two-story home. Of course, if you really want to confirm that and you don't have the plans, you can dig down to the side and just confirm that you do have a standard footing. What would typically be put in is going to be 4 feet below grade, so you're going to have to dig down a ways, and then you'll find something that protrudes about 4 inches out from the cement foundation wall and goes down another 8. Typically, that's a footing that's about 16 inches wide and 80 inches deep, and that's more than adequate in most soil conditions to carry the weight of a second-story addition. I do want to add, and I'm sure John might have some more to add on this, that the way you insulate and detail that addition will be very important for the comfort of you and your family, and also for the safety of your family. One of the things that we find many times is that an attached garage is a place where there are a lot of pollutants that get sucked into a home due to inadequate air sealing between that garage and the living space. And because a lot of homes actually do have slight negative pressure, you know, once you have occupied it both around it and above it, there's ample opportunity for the pollutants from the home to leak into the house. And then there's an air comfort issue, too. If it's not a very well-sealed and insulated floor, yeah, above that garage, you're going to have an uncomfortable space. And the way the heat ducts are detailed is very important. So you're going to want to spend some extra money on detailing the insulation package on that addition.
Yeah.
Upgrading to a heat pump for the house because of the age, and then a separate unit, air conditioner, heating unit just for that space.
Yeah. Would that make sense, John?
It certainly can be a fine way to go. Yep. Essentially a zone system with two separate units. It's a great way to provide comfort there, but we don't want to be excessive if we don't have to, right? If we can, depending on the size of the home and the way we can run ducts there, maybe often we're adding ducts from the existing system, but I'm not going to, without seeing the house, adding a separate system is a good thing. And one of the common things, complaints that I'm called on to is cold floors. So often people have socks and slippers on their feet in that bedroom above the garage, and their feet are still cold.
Yeah.
And that's because that floor detail isn't done correctly. So,
go ahead,
Jeff. One more thing I would just add is consistent with what John says there. If you do a really good job of improving the insulation and envelope of the home, and this is presuming that it's not a very tight house, I'll tell you, Greg, we find that a lot of homes built in the 70s were not insulated very well. And so, and that was right at the beginning of that period during the energy crunch in the 70s that we started to pay attention to heat loss in homes. But unfortunately, it took about 10 years for people to figure out how to do it well. And you may find there are a lot of improvements that can be made to your home, and you might want to look at that pretty carefully. You may find, depending on how old your current furnace is, that it is adequate to heat your entire home once it has been improved in its efficiency.
Yep. Good luck. Thanks a lot, Greg.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. And you can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer, as we visit home renovation and repair issues with John Viner, building services consultant out of Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, and Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Home renovation and repair are on our minds right now with John Viner and Chad Spate. Glad to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question. And Jim in St. Croix Falls has phoned in, so let's go to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Thanks for the show.
Sure.
We got some ice damming going on. It's abated now with the break in the weather, but I went up and looked in the attic, and there's only about 6 inches of cellulose in there.
Oh.
And so I'm thinking about blowing some insulation on top of it, and I guess the choices are cellulose or fiberglass, and I wonder what the pros and cons of either would be.
How often, Jim, do you have is ice damming occurred in the past?
Yeah, but not it's not severe.
Not severe, okay. One of the things that we really look closely before we blow insulation into that attic is a little bit more attic preparation work to be completed. Again, air sealing. People have this theory that we can add more insulation and our house gets tighter, and that's not the case in general. Some materials can help us achieve tighter homes when we insulate, but when we use a cellulose or a fiberglass product, we want to make sure that lid of the house, again, is tight, and that's what's aggravating the ice damming throughout Wisconsin this year is air leakage, not because as much as because we have lack of insulation. So it's a combination there. And before you would blow insulation over the top, boy, we'd like to know that the recessed lights are sealed, plumbing walls are tight where the plumbing stack goes through. If you got a whole house fan in the hallway someplace, that's another source for air to escape from the house into the attic. So those are our priority, and then we want to insulate, and cellulose is a great product to blow over what you got.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. So get that detail work done first. Jeff in Madison, your turn next. Hi, Jeff. Jeff, are you there? Where did Jeff go? Well, I guess we lost Jeff. Well, let's go to Scott in Milwaukee. Scott, hi to you.
Hi, gentlemen. I actually had a couple of questions about a bathroom renovation. I've got a house that's about 60 years old. I've heard the style described either as bungalow or Cape Cod. there's no exhaust vent in the bathroom, and I'd like to take care of that before I start getting into moisture problems with condensate and mold. And my question is whether I should vent through the outside wall or whether I should go up through the eaves and through the roof.
Well, that's a great question. I mean, a lot will depend on how easily you can fit the ductwork into the existing space. I mean, one of the downsides to having a wall fan that goes directly outside is it's very hard to seal that off when you don't want the ventilation.
Yeah.
So it's good to have rigid, insulated, and sealed ductwork that connects that fan, ideally in the ceiling, going out either a side gable wall or right out the roof. You know, the shorter that duct run and the more direct it is, the better performance you're going to get out of the fan.
Okay.
Another thing that I've just thinking about fans for bathrooms, I think a lot of fans are put in that are undersized. And so I think they need to be sized right. This, you know, this is sort of my lay thing on this. And the other thing I think is a good idea is to put a timer on the switch so that you can actually run that fan long enough to actually vent the moisture out. And, I mean, those are just Chad, is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, having a timer, there are switches now that actually have a timer built into them when you turn them off. They will continue to run for an additional 20 or 30 minutes, and that's something that you set behind the switch plate. So it's an intelligent switch, basically. It's a great product, and it is true that you do typically want to run that fan for an additional 20 to 60 minutes, depending, to clear all of that humid air out of the bathroom.
Yeah, John, you were going to add too?
Yeah, and then in choosing that fan, make sure you get a quiet one. Right, so they rate those in SONE, S-O-N-E rating. A one or less SONE is just a quiet fan that, you know, when you get one and it kind of sounds like a little propeller airplane taking off as you start it up, then we, you know, people don't want to use that. Yeah. Same as their kitchen fans when it's loud in the kitchen. They don't use them when maybe they should be. But, you know, hey, when you're entertaining and you want some communication, visiting, it's annoying. So quieter the better. It usually gets used a little more.
But, and that may be one reason why fans are sometimes undersized, because the smaller motors make less noise. But the SONE, that's the, you can get a fairly well-powered motor with a zone rating or SONE rating that's low and
absolutely
still get that moisture out of there. I'm speaking from experience here, folks.
So a Panasonic or a Brone fan or a couple of manufacturers out there that do a good job in their fans.
Yeah, right. And I would also just add a bit of advice to those out there listening. If you are thinking about venting your bathroom fan, it's really critical that you get that moist air out of the home to the outside. We see it all the time. We go up into someone's attic and they've got a bathroom fan or a kitchen fan and it's just dumping that humid, warm air into the attic.
Whoa.
It's a horrible thing to do to your home, and it will diminish its longevity. So the other thing, too, is that the ductwork, the bigger the dimension of that ductwork, the better. Many do-it-yourselfers will use a flexible duct, and it's okay to use flexible duct, but we always recommend that you up the size of it to perhaps a 6-inch duct, because you're going to get much better airflow through a flexible or a larger duct than through a smaller constricted space.
It's amazing when we actually measure the flow. You know, nobody, when they install the fan, typically is going to actually verify that it works, but there's more often we might measure 20 or 30 CFM for an 80 CFM rated fan, for example. Right? So it's because of the length of the ductwork, how it's put in. Maybe that little flapper got a little kinked and is stuck and it's not opening properly. So it's, again, through the Focus on Energy program, those building scientists offer their services to actually measure, verify, and even there's some help with that. If you're with a participating utility, there's actually some kickback for that quality exhaust fan.
Yeah.
Now, if there's already some outside venting in the eaves crawl space, should I make sure I just guide the ductwork straight to that, or does it need its own exit vent?
It needs its own exit vent for sure. So we need a dedicated termination to the outside. And if you go into the soffit and your soffit's full of, it's a perforated soffit, that's not the ideal place to put that termination because that moisture is going to exhaust underneath that eave, and then it has a tendency to rise back through the perforated soffit and, darn it, get right back into that attic. So that's where a sidewall vent or if you're on the second floor of your Cape Cod and you've got knee wall attic spaces up there that you can run out a small gable end wall, that would be ideal.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling, Scott. Appreciate it. And let's see, Kirsten in Madison, I believe, is next. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi, Kirsten.
My question is about ice dam and damage. How will I know if I have it? We definitely had an ice dam on our southwest exposure. In the corner of our house that adjoins to a three-season porch, we actually had water melting out through an exterior light fixture.
Boo.
So we feel pretty confident that we had ice damage built up in that corner of the house. But my husband went to the attic, and he does not see any evidence of moisture on the interior. But we're wondering, how are we going to know if we had some damage in that soffit and if it's damaged into the wall?
Hmm. Well, Chad, start with you.
Yeah, the good news is that exterior porch might not be insulated, and it might, in fact, by its way of construction, be designed or capable of drying out fairly easily. One of the big issues that we deal with as professionals in remodeling is that older homes were really leaky and they would dry out easily. They were very expensive to heat. Now that we've made homes much better insulated and much tighter, and particularly if we've put plastic up on the inside, once the house gets wet, it's almost impossible for it to dry out, and so we see a lot of rot and mold, dry rot. And so the good news is that porch might be okay. I think you're going to have to keep an eye on it if it's a painted surface. You'll know if the damage is significant by observing the underside come the spring once things have thawed out.
Okay.
You know, a professional can start to take it open and look at it if you're really concerned, but a lot of times if there's a problem, you'll see evidence of it on the outside.
Okay.
Great.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it very much. And let's see, we've got Beth, I believe, in Sheboygan next. Beth, hello to you.
Hi. What I wanted to talk about is a lot of folks are remodeling their homes to accommodate entertainment centers, media centers, you know, wall-mounted televisions and stuff. And I actually work for a company that installs satellite systems, and I cannot begin to count the number of times where I've run into one of two problems. Either a customer's pre-wired the home, and then a drywaller came through and screwed a screw right through the coaxial cable, or that they neglected to foresee that they were going to want satellite or cable or something other than off-air antenna feeding that television and didn't wire for it at all. And it's just, it's very worth a person's time if they're remodeling their basement on their own, or even if they're hiring someone, to make sure to consult with people that do audio video installs as professionals to make sure that their home is wired properly to accommodate that.
That's some good points, Chad.
Yeah, that's a great point. Certainly we always talk to our clients about how they're going to use a space so that we try to anticipate those sorts of things. Of course, each thing, like an extra wire, costs a little bit more money, and so a lot of times people will cut out some of those things, and particularly in a home, a lot of spec homes, you know, they have very minimal wiring and features in them, and so the homeowner has to go back and add those things. But I would agree with you. We certainly try to put coaxial cable and the T4 phone line, mm-hmm. or T5. My electricians know, but I...
right, or Cat 5E.
Yeah, the Cat 5. That's what I was trying to think of. It's important to run that wiring while the walls are open. It is much cheaper to do it then.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually hired somebody, probably Beth, a company kind of like you work for, to install an whole audio system into our home remodel, and it really worked well because we were, you know, able to do it while walls were torn up, and we put in an outside speaker system and an inside speaker system, and really wound up with we switched to a satellite system for our home too, and so all that I think was a lot cheaper to do it now than to try and do it after the fact.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, you know, everybody knows that if you have to cut a hole in a drywall, it has to be patched.
Yep.
So yep. It's just something that it's very well worth the $100 or $200 is usually all it costs for a consultation. If they're not coming in to install, if they're just giving you some tips, pointers, you know, it's well worth the money to invest in that while you're remodeling rather than have the regrets later on that you didn't do it.
Yeah, good points, Beth. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Bill in Watertown is next, so let's go to Bill. Hi, Bill.
Good morning. Thank you for the great program, Larry.
Thank you.
A question I have, I have a couple questions, if I could. About a 100-year-old house, cedar shingles, stained cedar shingles, and the south side is looks to me it's really starting to dry out, and I'm wondering if I should replace those, and if I do, what kind of a person would do that, and then once those shingles are off, should I be blowing in some kind of insulation into the walls?
Yeah.
Well, you're certainly going to want to find a roofer with considerable experience in dealing with cedar shingles and cedar shakes, because that is something that not many roofers do anymore, and you need to make sure you get the details right. The substrate under that cedar roof is a very critical component because water will get past the cedar, and the cedar really is protecting the underlayment, the underlayment will keep the water out. Cedar is a high maintenance material, and so it's really important that, and again, you can consult with a local professional to potentially have them do it, put some treatments on that roof, which is going to need to be done on a somewhat regular basis. I think a cedar roof typically can't go more than 10 years without having some sort of treatment applied to it, having it cleaned and resealed.
It's actually a siding, not a roof.
For the wall, yep. So we're discussing on the wall side. So I do not have a product necessarily. Maybe Chad can help you with that. But certainly when it comes to insulating, the first thing we need to know in that 100-year-old house is the type of wiring that may or may not be in that wall. So we don't want old knob and tube wiring that's active in those walls for us, and then fill it with insulation. So
now,
that electrical has to be taken care of first. Then certainly we can blow those walls with a loose fiber insulation, which is either a cellulose product, which is my preferred method, or a fiberglass. But it has to be dense packed in and installed with care and put in at a very high density so that we prevent the settling component. And it certainly can be done, and there's experienced insulators throughout the state that have been trained through the Focus on Energy program to do that.
The expanding foam type insulation would not be a good one for that kind of application?
I don't have a good lead for somebody to do that expanding spray foam in a closed cavity like that wall system. So if we were pulling the siding to reside and we're opening up the wall cavities themselves, then that becomes the application for spray foam, which would give us the greatest R value per inch in that wall.
Okay. Yeah.
So once I get the siding, well, the electrical, I'm sure there's, you know, it's old electrical in those walls, so I'm not sure I want to then mess with that. That's quite a project, I would assume.
Absolutely, and you would need a professional electrician to assess that for you.
But it might be worth the money to do that. I don't know. What do you guys think?
What are you heating with, Bill?
I'm heating with actually, I got a really interesting heating system. It's hot water, uh-huh. and the it's a boiler, and the boiler actually dates to 1930.
Okay.
Now, most people would think that it's very inefficient, but it's really not. I mean, I have a 3,000 square foot house, approximately 2-story, with a full floored attic, and our cost of heating is very low, I think. What's low?
Worst in the winter, what does it get here? Just a ballpark figure.
Well, I actually am on We Energy's budget program.
Great.
And and there's just the two of us. Our children are gone.
Mm-hmm.
We pay a budget 12 months out of the year for hot water, gas, and so forth, $185 a month.
Okay, and that's electric too, then? Or?
That's electric also.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I'm thinking maybe $1,400 to heat.
Yeah.
I've had people come and look at the at this Kiwani boiler and say, you know, gee, there's got to be something more efficient. And I've had a couple people tell me, he said, I'm not looking to lose a sale, but he said, if you take care of this boiler, it may last forever.
No.
And I really can't guarantee much of a savings for you.
No. Well, so, good for you.
May be that old one, you know, that HVAC technician can do a combustion efficiency test. He can see whether it's 65 or it's 75% compared to 90% today, right?
Yeah.
So we can look at that difference, and likely there is a 20% or greater upgrade in efficiency in that unit, and it certainly could be measured, and your technician should do that for you.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Lastly, and real quickly, is there a website where a person could go to find out about an energy audit?
Absolutely. So that's focusonenergy.com. And
okay.
They just upgraded their website, so it's new and improved.
You're in the area where you would certainly, in Watertown there, you'd certainly be eligible.
Yeah. There'd
be
We Energies, absolutely.
Yeah. Yep.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Bill. Appreciate it. And if you'd like to join in, the number to call 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Ralph in Genoa City is up next. Ralph, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a home that's about 100 years old, and over the years we've put siding and new roofs and everything. But we have a lot of windows in it, the older style big windows. And I've been wanting to go into some of the new high-tech windows, but I see prices anywhere from $189 to $450 or $500 a window. And I have at least 17 windows to do. And I kind of want to know, you know, what is overkill and what is wasting my money on buying a cheaper one.
Yeah. Go ahead, Chad.
Well, that's a great question. We deal with potential window replacement for a lot of clients, and I'm certainly never opposed to talking them out of it, because you are correct. The investment in a window replacement, the national average on that will generally be somewhere between $1,000 per window opening for a average kind of mid-range performing window to up to $1,500 an opening for a high-end window. And so that's a large investment. And when we do the energy payback calculations, we find that it's a generally 25 to 30 year payback on a window replacement investment. Now, having said that, there are a lot of other good reasons you might consider improving your windows. That would be for more functionality, easier to clean.
Comfort.
Yes, easier to operate. Much quieter. Our clients always comment on if they live on a busy street, wow, I don't hear the cars anymore. So, you know, that something that insulates against the heat and cold also helps insulate against sound transmission. So there are many good reasons you might look at upgrading some of your windows, but it is a very costly undertaking, and you want to do it right.
may I ask, is there a price, or do I is there a technical term that I have to look at the glass or the gas in between the windows, or is there something that I can look to measure?
Sure.
You bet. So the lower the U value, the better. So U value is a term for how well does it transmit heat. And an Energy Star window is going to have a U value of 0.35 or below. So in Wisconsin, certainly we want to be there. And if we can be around 0.29, 0.3, oh boy, we got a really good window. And often that's what it's going to take to even start eliminating condensation on the windows in our cold Wisconsin winters as our homes get tighter. We hold the moisture in our homes. Another attribute of a quality window is condensation reduction. If we're on another attribute of the windows is the solar heat gain coefficient. So you'll see this on many windows on the rating that they're going to have. The lower solar heat gain coefficient, the less heat it allows in. So we want a lower number on our west sides to prevent overheating in the summertime, for example.
Mm-hmm.
In the south, east, maybe we want a higher solar heat gain coefficient to allow more heat in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate the help. I've kind of been thinking about it for quite a while, and that the advertisements are like an avalanche on the radio for all these different kind of windows, and I can just... I don't know how to measure it, you know. And thank you. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And in those kinds of situations, too, Chad, as you were saying, or John, too, sometimes a few strategically placed windows, you know, replacements, you might not need to go with more than three or four, maybe, or five, as opposed to Ralph have 17 or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, a lot of people will stage the project to go over 3, 4, 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, many people want to tighten up the windows that they sleep under.
Yeah.
Because that can, you know, if you want to turn the heat down, it's not fun to be under a drafty window in a bedroom. So it just depends on how you live in your home.
Yeah.
It's interesting. When we start doing the blower door test, this is a test to measure the leakage rate of the house, how often will this prove that the windows are actually the very leaky component of the house? It's other areas that we can prevent drafts and improve comfort before the windows. Sometimes that old single pane glass that's rattling is the leaky window that we thought it was, and then we can prove that, and we can help you prioritize.
Yeah, makes good sense. Thanks again, Ralph, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Talking home renovation and repair issues today with John Viner, building and services consultant in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. Chad Spade is owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair with John Viner and Chad Spade. And guys, I want to go back to that cedar siding issue because if my memory serves, there are some products out there now that look like cedar, but really aren't cedar and might even do a better job for that earlier caller.
Yeah, that's correct, Larry. We recommend cement siding for a lot of our projects, and we find that homeowners just love this. It's a newer product. It's been around for a little over 10 years, and it looks like cedar. It is generally a painted product. It is actually a cement-based product.
Mm-hmm.
It's very heavy. It's very durable. It's thinner than wood. It is installed like wood. And because it's paintable, it's very versatile. While you do have to exercise some caution, if you're a do-it-yourselfer and you are installing it, it is because it has silica in it, which is a carcinogen. When you're cutting it, you have to use proper equipment to keep from breathing that in. But once it's installed, it's going to last. It has a 50-year warranty, generally.
Yeah.
And the paint surface or the paint coat, if it's factory applied, generally is a 25-year warranty. And then if you want to change the color, you have that flexibility. And one of the problems with vinyl siding, which I really dislike, is that once it breaks or is damaged, or if you just don't like the color, you pretty much have to tear it off. You cannot effectively paint a vinyl product. And then, of course, the production of a vinyl product is a very polluting thing. And so we discourage the use of it for that reason as well.
Yeah, we use the cement fibers. Is that what it's called? Cement fiber siding is the new siding on our home. And really pleased with it. And it also apparently for hail, and that it's much stronger against something like hail.
That's correct. And those hailstorms that came through Madison back almost 2 years ago, we had a project. We had put a two-story addition on a home with the fiber cement siding, and the rest of the home was aluminum. And that aluminum siding was destroyed by the hailstorm, and the homeowner decided to cover the entire house in fiber cement, but the addition was fine. There was no damage.
No damage at all to that. Yep. Laura in Vesper, it's your turn. Hi, Laura.
Hi. My sister owns a unit in an 8-unit condominium, and right above her unit where the two different slopes of the roof met, ice backed up that valley, and it actually, the water melted and penetrated where she had a wet ceiling, wet wall, and wet carpet in her living room. She just dried it up with a fan, and she thinks everything is all well and good now. But now after hearing you say something about, you know, the modern houses, it's nearly impossible to dry out, my question is, where do I steer her, you know, does a dehumidifier work? Do we need to get professionals in there to make sure that she doesn't end up with long-term damage? What should she do next?
Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. And I would say that she'd be well advised to have a professional look at it if she's not comfortable going up in the attic and assessing the damage come the spring. The situation we're dealing with this winter has been extreme. Many people, even some homes that are well insulated, have had to struggle with some minimal water damage. You're just going to have to get up there in the attic and look at the structure, make sure that it has in fact dried out, that there's not significant rot damage, that there's not mold or fungus developing on the framing structure. Occasionally you will find that, and you can smell it when you go up in the space. I mean, it will be very musty and damp. And if that's the case, then something will need to be done to rectify the situation.
Yeah.
If you can, if there's an association with that condo units or the buildings that you're in, often the Focus on Energy program will work with the condo association to maybe help provide some guidance on improving the energy efficiency is the focus. But the byproduct is we stop ice damming or start reducing the ice damming as we improve the energy efficiency of the building. So if there's a broader coalition than on the condo association side, for example, then Focus on Energy can offer some free advice or consultation initially as well and some guidance.
Mm-hmm. Good so points.
Would that be the first group to call, or is there a separate professional?
That would be the first group to contact and let them know your situation as far as how many units per building. That'll break it out into the right program category. And then if there's enough, if it's on an individual basis, then likely they'll direct you to the home performance consultants that are out there that you can get a list and call somebody in your area if they don't accept or it doesn't fall into their multifamily program.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Laura, for calling. Appreciate it. Jerry in Madison is next. So let's go to Jerry. Hi, Jer.
Hi. I don't have a real serious problem, but it's kind of an annoying one. I have a two-story house that was built in 93, and above the the two-bedroom windows, the builder had installed a fan-shaped decorative piece. And last month, during some high winds, it blew off. Now, I would have expected this thing to be screwed and glued and probably caulked besides, but it only had it only had four nails holding it. I'm just wondering if that's standard procedure or what.
This was a decorative piece up in the up at the peak on the gable.
Yes.
Is that correct? Yeah.
Yes.
And what type of siding do you have on your home?
Vinyl.
Vinyl, okay. Well, you know, there a lot of times, was that made out of a foam board, or is it?
I'm not sure. It's fairly heavy. I don't think it's foam, but it might be a plastic or a composite of some sort.
Right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of times adhesives will be used in conjunction with some nails or screws, and unfortunately, sometimes things like that just get slapped up, and you know, it hasn't been properly fastened, and eventually it's going to fall off. So I would say that you probably do want to reattach it a little bit more substantially, but...
Yeah. Doesn't sound like they hit the framing members.
Right, that's right.
Apparently not. Right.
All right.
Okay, yeah, I'll have to wait until spring now, but
yep.
I'll get it back up.
All right, thanks, Darren.
Thank you.
Darren in Racine, your turn. Hi, Darren.
Hi, John and Chad. I've got a moisture problem. I've got a two-story brick farmhouse that was built in 1911 that we're renovating, and last summer we did two things. We put isonine expanding foam insulation in the attic, and we also added air conditioning. And after it rains, I would open up cupboard doors that are on the exterior wall, and it actually smelled damp in them, and the whole house just felt damp. And my first thought was that we had blocked the passage for moisture to escape out of the top of the walls through the attic. But as I read more about it, I thought perhaps it's just that we're air conditioning this house for the first time in close to 100 years, and we're sucking the damp air in from outside. So I'm wondering, I don't see any type of weep holes on the exterior. I don't know if they were filled in the last time the house was repointed or what, but I'm wondering if the solution is to add some vents on the lower exterior and the upper exterior underneath the soffits. And my question, I guess, is who would I call to confirm this, and who would I have do that type of work?
Okay, so we got an old farmhouse, brick house. We spray foam the roof rafters up in the attic. So is it a finished attic space then right now?
It will be, but right now it's
okay.
Interior space.
And we brought that spray foam all the way down to the top of the exterior wall.
Correct.
Of the second floor.
Correct.
Okay, so we made the house tighter, for one, is what comes to mind. Okay, so we're going to hold whatever moisture is being produced in the house longer, or it's going to build up to higher levels as we make houses tighter. So we have to first look at what kind of sources of moisture are there. Is the basement damp at all? Does the basement ever been damp, or does it get damp in rains?
It doesn't. It had tiles put in about 15 years ago, and it's really been pretty dry. I run a humidifier or a dehumidifier down there, but for the most part, it's pretty dry.
Okay, so that's good. Then we're going to, our first objective is looking at those sources, how to reduce them. So our problem is in the summertime?
Well, we just put the foam in last summer and the air conditioning about the same time, mm-hmm. and that was the first time that the house has been in the family for almost 100 years, and it's the first time we've ever had this moisture issue.
And that moisture issue, that smell is happening in the summertime versus now during the winter.
Correct. Right after it rained, we noticed the house just felt really damp for like a day afterward.
Okay, so we have a brick exterior, and then there may or may not be a framed wall.
No frame wall, but there's it's double brick with an airspace between.
Okay, so those bricks are obviously holding the moisture and transferring the moisture to the inside, and we have less drying potential than we did in the past. The air conditioner should, you know, help us with dehumidification, right? If the duct system is relatively balanced, we're not in any way bringing exterior moist summertime air into the home or into those cavities as a result of running the air conditioner. If everything's up to snuff.
Should be the opposite.
Yeah, we should be, well, at least we're dehumidifying with that air conditioner, and that's one of our goals, to provide comfort during the summertime. what we should do, what can we do to solve that problem in the summertime? That brick is getting cold and maybe it's staying, it sounds like it's moist after it rains, not just because of indoor humidity. So we certainly got to look at grading issues and keeping that rainwater running away from that building. We need kickouts on the gutters at least 4 to 6 feet and a nice slope. So any rainwater or where gutters aren't maintained, that soaks into the ground. And if we have even a little slope towards the house, that goes right to that foundation, right up that brick wall. So those are the first steps in mitigating that rainwater.
Mm-hmm. And it's surprising how many, and especially an older home like that, you know, over time that just sort of sinks down. And if you don't add some dirt or add some fill around that house, it's going to drain right toward the house. And a lot of problems could be solved by just getting proper drainage away, that's for sure. Well, good luck to you, Darren. Thanks very much for calling. John Viner, Chad Spade, our guest today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair issues now with John Viner, Building Services and Consultant Company, a representative from Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. Chad Spate is owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. If you have a question for them, join us with a call at 1-800-642-1234. And before we go back to the phones, I know, Chad, that you and John both are going to be involved in a remodeling expo, and we found those quite useful in past, you know, in the past years, just to get ideas and be able to talk to professionals and what's going on
yep,
with that.
That's right, Larry. Coming up a week from tomorrow, Friday the 18th through January 20th at the Middleton Marriott, the Nary Home Remodeling Expo will be happening again this year. It's a great opportunity to meet professional remodelers, most of whom are in the National Association of the Remodeling Industry, our local chapter. There are a lot of suppliers there, subcontractors, designers, people like John, home performance consultants. And if you've got a home remodeling project or you just want to learn more about what's new and what you might do, it's a great opportunity to come out. And John and I are actually going to be presenting a couple of seminars during the weekend. We have one on Friday at 4:45, and then we have another one Saturday morning, which is at 11 o'clock. So if people mm-hmm. want to come out and meet us mm-hmm. and
absolutely
and see the whole thing, then we're happy to do that.
So. And probably there's a website on that too, I would guess.
Yes, if you go to remodelingmadison.org, that is the Nary of Madison site, and you can go in. There's a picture of our expo, or you look over on the left side of the webpage. There's the Remodeling Expo is listed, and you click through that. You can get more information on seminars, tickets, times.
The whole ball of wax.
That's correct.
And by the way, while we're at it, you, Chad, you have a website for your company as well, do you?
That's correct. It's chadscarpentry.com.
ChadsCarpentry.com. Okay, is there an apostrophe in there? Or is
no,
it...
it's just one word.
Chad's,
no punctuation.
No, okay, ChadsCarpentry.com. And John Viner, you've got an email. Somebody wants to get a hold of you via email. How do they do that?
Email address is John, J-O-H-N, at Home Performance Testing. So mm-hmm. one big long word, HomePerformanceTesting.net.
.net.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There you have it. And let's go back to the phones here. Some folks been waiting a while. Ken, thank you for waiting. Ken in Verona, your turn. Hello.
Hi. Well, since I've been holding, I think of all kinds of questions. I'm standing outside my house right now looking at it. Oh, geez, I could ask about that. I could ask about that. My main question why I called is I've got this harebrained idea that I want to dig out our crawl space and put a basement under there.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering what... if that's cost-effective, I know it probably depends on the site. You know, as far as square footage, cost per square foot versus, you know, a full-blown addition of the same amount.
How high is the crawl space right now?
It's a cemented over crawl space. It's on kind of a slope. So at the shortest, it's about 2 feet, and at about... the highest is about 4 feet, 4.5 feet.
Oh, okay. mean, one of the things you're likely to find at the lower end of the crawl, or at the part of the crawl space where you've only got a couple of feet, is that the foundation may only go down there an additional 4 feet,
right,
if that. And so to put a full basement under the home there, you'd be looking at one of two things. You would either raise the house over the foundation that's there, or you'd have to put in a new foundation that is lower than the existing foundation. And that's a very delicate process, because you, in effect, have to undermine the existing foundation to put in a new one. So it's going to typically be very costly to dig out under a home, and putting on an addition might be a better, more cost-effective approach. But that, you know, the devil's always in the details in remodeling,
yeah,
and so to have a professional look at it, either an architect or a remodeling contractor,
that's something you'd.
It is. It is something that we could help you with, certainly.
And that's chadscarpentry.com.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your time.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, that's our neighbor on one side of our house. Because we live on the lake, the original home that was next to us did not have a very high basement. And they actually lifted the house up, dug down.
Yep.
And I didn't ask the neighbor how much that cost, but it had to be a lot of money to do.
I know from a few projects that we've been involved in that, you know, the cost on these particular jobs, and again, every job is different, but it's been in the order of $10,000 to $15,000 just for the lifting of the home.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Let's go to Bob in Milwaukee. Hello to you, Bob.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have just one problem. This is a 15-year-old ranch, and the bathroom ceiling vents, in the wintertime, when it starts getting cold, they will leak water, and I assumed it was water going from the home through the vent up in the cold attic and then condensing down. They both are vented to a, I looked in the attic, and they both are vented to a Y, and then that Y up to a roof vent. And I've tried various things. I've had this problem since day one. And the builder thought it was just snow getting in there, but I know now that that's not the case, because I had this. I've had this water dripping down through the vents in both bathrooms, and when there was no snow at all, just the cold.
Yeah.
And what they've used is just that white flexible 4-inch piping,
yeah,
from the vents up to the roof, the same that you would use on a dryer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering if that should have been wrapped or insulated or something. When I put a plastic over the cap on the roof, and the roof is sloped to the north, when I put a plastic cap over it, or just a plastic bag, and tape it and leave it for the whole winter, and put 2 inches of fiberglass insulation and don't use the vents in the winter, that alleviates the problem. Now, this year, I left the roof bare, because I know it doesn't leak, because in wind-driven rainstorms and whatever have you, it never leaks a drop in a summertime or a spring or fall.
Yeah.
Right.
But now this winter, I've just put the fiberglass on the inside of both bathroom vents, but they still leaked because,
yeah,
that top was open.
Okay, well, so we both guys.
Yeah.
John, you want to start?
Certainly that bath vent should be insulated, and it's that interior moisture getting into that bath fan vent pipe and condensing, and we've got a nice slope or a nice fall for that water to drip back in to that fan. So insulating that pipe or exchanging that pipe, it sounds like we've got two fans wide together with one termination. We have, sounds like it's all with flex pipe all the way up. And when you look in the attic, you look at that white snaky flex pipe going to your roof, right?
Exactly.
So it certainly should be insulated well. You know, we like a hard pipe product that reduces the restriction to airflow. Though if it's a short run, if it's the termination's right above the fans, and we're talking about 5 feet or so, you know, an insulated flex pipe that's strapped up well, nice and tight, with the appropriate details, can be a long-lasting fix and be a pipe that's pre-insulated, and that will help to eliminate that problem.
Yeah.
And when you just put fiberglass on the interior of the home, you're putting fiberglass in the fan and not using that in the wintertime. And maybe the home will still function without removing the moisture in the home because, you know, we don't have excessive humidity levels, and that's can work for us. But ideally, we want it to function. The fiberglass put up there isn't maybe not necessarily an airtight barrier, so the air was still able to get around that fiberglass. If we're literally talking about loose fill, itchy fiberglass, the air goes right through that and the moisture with that air, and it'll certainly drip right back down.
Yes, that's probably what's happening then.
Yep.
I kind of figured that there should be insulated some way. And incidentally, they both are fairly long runs from what I can see. By going up in the walk-in closet, you know, where they got little 2x2 doors up there. I opened that up, and I took a flashlight, and I looked in there, and they're both quite a long run.
Yeah.
Yep, so better, often it's a 3-inch vent pipe. We want to go at least a 4-inch vent pipe and have it insulated.
Yep. Maybe six.
And then we get that moisture removal adequately.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Bob. Bill in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Bill.
This last summer, the lamination on our roofing has completely come off the aggregate, or those little pebbles that are on there.
Yeah.
From the beginning of the summer to the end of the summer, and it's not in any sort of pattern. It just seems to be hit and miss on the entire roof, but some of it is delaminated to the point of where next year we're going to have to replace it. The roof is about 11 years old, and I just don't know if that could be caused by a lack of circulation in the attic or heat in the attic, or if this might just be a problem with the materials themselves.
11 years isn't a real long time, Chad.
No, it's not, though it's unfortunately not uncommon to see some roofing fail after 10 years, and so it could be some of the things that you have already mentioned, Bill. It could be, in fact, that the roof deck is not properly insulated not ventilated properly, so that the heat is building up in the summertime, and that can really cause a roof to prematurely fail. So that's one of the reasons that ventilation under a roof deck can be very effective in helping a home last a long time. You might want to have a professional look at that to give you an assessment of what's going on. And I would really put in another plug here for the Focus on Energy program, because one of the reasons that we bring out Focus on Energy evaluators to almost all of our remodeling projects is that we want to empower the homeowner with the information, scientific information, of what's really going on with the house. The home performance evaluator is not trying to sell you something. They're trying to help you understand the home and hopefully collaborate with your contractor to do a better job. And that's one of those situations where I could tell you to just call a roofer, but unless you know that you have a very knowledgeable, competent roofer, you know, they may not be able to properly assess that the way an evaluator does. And even though we consider ourselves expert on building science, we always like having that additional expert opinion of the Focus on Energy consultant.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Lauren in Madison, hi.
Hello, how are you guys doing today?
Great, thank you for calling.
Enjoying your show. I've got so many questions, but I'll focus on one. I have a cabin that I built in southwestern Wisconsin, and I built it on the side of a hill on posts, like treated posts like you use for a pole barn. It's not a very large structure. Mm. And on the when I was building it, I used a vapor barrier under the floor and an insulation underneath that. And it's open underneath. And over time, you know, the insulation's come down. I had some screen under it that kind of came down. So I want to redo that whole insulation system under there. I'm kind of wondering what would be the best approach to that. One of the things I considered is tearing everything out and spraying some foam under there. But interested what you guys would think would be a good way to go.
Yeah, so that floor system is open to the outside, you're saying, right? So,
right.
And then how are the, I'm curious, how comfortable is it in the home at this point? How do you, is it this retreat cabin, or is this a second home, or is this where you live full time?
No, it's a second home. And actually, the only time we heat it with a wood stove, and the only time we heat it is when we're out there.
Okay.
So it hasn't really been, right now, because the insulation has fallen out in quite a few spots, there are cold spots in the floor. I'm not looking for, you know, a super high R value, but just something consistent across it.
Right.
Yeah.
So a foam product, whether it's a expanding spray foam product or a foam sheeting material, I really like under those open floors, right? So as the wind blows through underneath that floor system, we want an insulating material that's going to be airtight. A loose fill, whether that's cellulose or fiberglass, is not airtight. We can try sometimes, but it is not airtight and allows that breeze to go through. So, you know, layering a 2-inch foam board, a couple layers, say you get 4 inches of foam board, you get an R20 value in that floor system. And you're cutting it and piecing it in between the floor joist and you're caulking every seam. That could be more of a do-it-yourselfer product that you get a nice monolithic foam insulated floor cavity. The spray foam, if the applicator is doing a good job and taking care, then we get it. We get a similar product.
Protection from insects? Are insects going to be kind of, we have a lot of like wasps and stuff, are they going to be prone to go after that that foam board or any foam product, or are they?
Yes, I mean some rodents and other animals are going to eat through it, so you do have to be wary of that. You might consider putting a layer of plywood on the underside to protect it. Once you've sealed it in. And I'll add, too, that you want to be very careful not to put in multiple vapor barriers under this structure. It sounds like you've already got plastic directly below the floor, which is okay. That's where it should be. It should be on the heated side of the wall or floor or structure. But then anything else you do, make sure that air can pass through it. You could use kind of a high-tech, like a Tyvek or something, if you were wanting to be able to wrap it. But moisture or moisture needs to be able to pass through that.
Yeah.
So plywood, unvented plywood would be okay for that. That would there'd be enough. Enough breathability in it that moisture could get through that.
Yeah, plywood would be fine. I would discourage you from putting up OSB, or the oriented strand board, because that actually behaves pretty much like a vapor barrier. So you might have some problems with trapped moisture in that floor assembly.
Okay. Just one last quick question on the spray foam product. So the two-part foam product is not available to the do-it-yourselfer yet. Is that the case?
I think that we can find that, or that you can find that two-part spray foam. I don't have a source off the top of my head, but seems like there's a way.
Yeah, I'll do
yeah, there might be.
On the web.
There might be.
Okay, good luck.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Lauren. Bill in Fort Atkinson, your turn. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, I have a two-part question related to entry door replacement.
Okay.
I have a 1920 Tudor stucco home, and one of the problems is that they're 32-inch doors, and they're getting so they're not real functional. So my first part is, number one, can I get wood door replacements that go with the house? And the second question would be, would I need a fairly specialized craftsman-type remodeler to do that job?
Well, these are French 32-inch French doors. Where are they on the home exactly?
the entry doors.
Okay.
You know, they're just the old traditional wood entry doors, and we'd like to replace them to so they go with the house with
sure.
wood doors.
Well, you're going to have a couple of options. It is possible to have custom, you know, real wood doors, you know, made for that. It will be very expensive, but it is an option. There are additional options you will have with very nice looking fiberglass doors that look like a wood door. Therma-Tru is one manufacturer. There are others, Peachtree. A number of the big door manufacturers do make a fiberglass skin that's going to give you better thermal performance and better resistance to the wear and tear of the Wisconsin weather that an exterior door will see. But it'll give you that beauty and that authentic look that you're looking for. And it probably will have to be professionally installed. Doors are tricky, but...
will the 32-inch openings be a problem with availability, though?
No, 32-inch is a common size.
Oh, I'm sorry. They're 34. That's what the problem is.
Oh, okay. Well, 34, I mean, the good news if you do a wood custom door is that that won't be a problem. But 34-inch doors are not very commonly found.
Right, right.
But what you might consider doing is converting to a double 32-inch opening, reduce the size of that opening a little bit so that you can use standard doors.
But see, then we're getting into the stucco construction, see, and that I wonder how messy that would be. You know,
well, you know, typically when you replace an exterior door, it's most cost-effective to tear out the entire jamb. Now, on the stucco old home, I mean, it may make sense not to do that. So that's going to be something that a professional would have to weigh the pros and cons and the cost, you know, analysis of which way to go on that. But if the jamb's in good shape, it might be worth keeping it, but then you're forced to have a custom-sized door.
Yeah. So a few things to consider there.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate it very much. And guys, I wanted to mention again, the Remodeling Expo is coming up a week from tomorrow, right? Starts?
That's correct. Yeah, the 18th to the 20th.
18th to the 20th. And where is it located again?
At the Middleton Marriott, which is out on the west side of town, right off the Beltline. And it's Friday from 2 to 7. Saturday from 9 to 7, and Sunday from 10 to 4. And
the website on that is?
You go to www.remodelingmadison.org.
Remodelingmadison.org. And, Chad, again, what's your website for your company?
You can learn more about us at chadscarpentry.com. My email is chad@chadscarpentry.com.
Mm-hmm. And John Viner, you've got an email address, too, for us.
Absolutely. So email, happy to answer questions, at John, J-O-H-N, at homeperformancetesting.net.
Homeperformancetesting.net. John at homeperformancetesting.net.
That's right. And again, Chad and I are presenting at the NARE show and hope to see you there.
All right. Thank you, guys, very much. I look forward to another visit from you. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
John Viner of Building Services and Consultant, and Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, our guests. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.